This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
In 2014, a failed stand-up comic entered a contest called The Hunt for the Host. He did not win. Later, he was joined by an underperforming Oregon State fullback with a community college degree. These men, neither having earned the position and possessing no real skills, continue on as radio personalities. If you have nothing better to do on a Saturday morning, and if you can find them, maybe you can hear The Sinner and the Saint. Starring Luke Anderson.
We got a lot of gentlemen's clubs. How do you like those? Oh, hey, everybody.
Mickey Mouse, yeah.
It is now. Devolved into that.
And Will Darkens.
Ear or eye?
Where do you want it?
On 1080 The Fan.
Hour number two of The Sinner and the Saint. Ryan Buckley here this Saturday morning filling in for Luke Anderson, who's out on vacay. I am joined by regular member of this program, Will Darkens. Behind the board, behind
Hello.
The glass.
Will Darkens, regular member of this program here.
That is you. And what under
so it says on my business card.
Underachieving Oregon State fullback, is that right? Is that what it said in the open?
That is in fact correct.
But aren't you like a big national music writer now? Isn't that what you do now?
I do a little bit of that. Big national music writer. I wouldn't go as far to say big.
I would.
Writing for radio.com and posting some Taylor Swift and Korn articles.
Oh, baby.
Korn. Let me tell you something about that band.
Freak on a Leash.
I didn't realize one of them is like a Jesus guy now, like really religious.
Really?
Like devoutly, yeah. Which,
huh.
You know, it's kind of weird because
so they've become POD.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, a little bit. One of them is. He had kind of like a revelation because I think he was an alcoholic.
Okay.
But it's weird because you got that mixed with Korn being Korn, right? Like you've heard Korn. Right?
I've heard Freak on a Leash. That's basically it.
Like, that's as much as you need to know about what they bring to the table, which is some nasty S. I'm just saying. It's a little weird.
Okay. Well, so I am hanging out with esteemed music writer Will Darkens this morning. Not just questionable fullback. What was it? Underachieving fullback.
Normal contributor to the show.
Normal contributor to the show. Well, we are talking a little sports this morning on this show after we pivot away from growing genitals on forearms.
Well, but I also would like to point out somebody texting in 503-250-1080 on the Fan text line. We talked about this, right? Our earlier conversation in hour one, where did you hide your beer in your dorm room? Somebody made the pick of a laundry hamper, dirty laundry.
Yep.
That's a good pick. But, you know, you got to position it just enough so it's between clothes, because if you keep it at the bottom, people will see the outline of the cans.
Agreed.
Yeah.
No, I think that's wise. The other person on here saying a hole in the underside of my mattress in the dorm. Now, I guess that could get uncomfortable, but if it was just a temporary hiding spot, maybe that works.
I mean, if you really need to drink, then you'll do anything.
The person says, for the beer, hand the weed.
Now, weed, it wouldn't work that well. Not that, and that is why you need to.
Well, I think
it'd
be more comfortable to sleep on weed than sleep on beer.
Well, people are going to smell the weed.
Oh, that's true.
Now, let me tell you something. I'm going to give my kid this suggestion, okay? I'm going to say, look, at some point in college, you might want to smoke some pot, maybe even in high school.
Hmm.
You don't know what that is yet. But what I recommend to you is, 13-year-old child of mine, start wearing cologne now.
Interesting.
Just start doing it now. Because if you do it on a consistent basis, and you smoke pot before you go to class,
I see
you
where
put
you're...
cologne on, people won't think anything because they'll go, eh, that's cologne guy.
Well, see, I think, I mean, not just before you go to class, but in general, I think if you reach an age where you're supposed to be experimenting with drug use and you start suddenly smelling like cologne,
yes,
it, you know, sets off the radar for the parentals, the teachers, people.
That's
like
right.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then when they ask your friends and they try to corroborate.
So
them
you're saying always be a cologne guy and you won't ever have to worry about smelling like weed or booze.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Just be a consistent cologne guy, because for the most part, there's nothing wrong with cologne guy unless he's intense cologne.
Yeah, too much cologne guy is a little bit of a problem.
Yes. But if you're wearing just the right amount, which is you take your ring finger, you put it over the little bottle thing, and then you do two taps on the neck, that's enough.
So you go ring finger. Who taught you that?
I think I just naturally did it.
Interesting. I don't feel like I use my ring finger for anything ever.
Other than a ring?
Well, yeah, it holds my ring.
Now, do you have people point things out with their ring finger?
Never. I've seen the pinky point, which I like. I've seen the single point.
Sure.
And then obviously there's the bird, but that's not really point as much as it is. Sometimes I will use the bird for like...
To point things.
For like buttons for touching, like radio, stuff like that.
You know what, though? I've noticed with an older generation that they use the bird to point stuff out. Like Xers and boomers, like if you're like asking about something on a computer screen and they have to point it out, they're like, no, this is what I was looking at.
Right.
Like they'll use their middle finger. And that was kind of off-putting to me initially.
When you're like a little kid, you're like, that's the bad finger.
Yeah. And then I started noticing like more and more people from that generation were using the middle to point stuff out. And I was kind of like, oh, I guess that's what they do.
Well,
I don't know.
Major League Baseball might have to give the middle finger to their season coming up here, because now we have, after the Miami Marlins have been shut down until at least Monday after they've got, I think, some 18 cases now within their organization.
And who didn't see that coming, by the way?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. I don't think the Marlins did initially, because they were fine when they left Miami. It got bad after their exhibition games in Atlanta, when a report from Bob Nightingale says they went out to the club and then they showed up in Philly, and that's when the outbreak started. So now, though, we have a team that hasn't come into any contact with the Marlins also turning in more positive tests. It's the St. Louis Cardinals. Yesterday they had two. Today they have four more. Yesterday's game got canceled or postponed. Same with today. Maybe I'm oversimplifying this too much. It seems to me like we have a situation now where sports in a bubble are going to work and sports not in a bubble may not. At least with that many bodies, do you see baseball season? And this is a precursor for us. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but if baseball can't figure it out, I'm not sure how football does. I'm not saying they can't, but they're going to have to do things a lot differently, because baseball seems like it's in real peril right now.
Baseball's in peril, and I think that baseball, to be quite honest, didn't even really want this.
You might be right.
I'm kind of starting to think that they didn't really even want to do this, because I think that there was a really concerted effort behind how the NBA was trying to come back and do the bubble league and everything, and you had a full-on focused public relations campaign to promote this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning you had Adam Silver on television probably 2-3 times a week talking about it on national TV. You had him and players talking about it, and he allowed the players to bring up what grievances or concerns that they would have.
Yeah.
Because in his mind, he goes, look, if I'm going to try this thing, we have to promote the S out of it. We have to have everybody on board, and we have to be completely transparent.
Bingo. Buy-in. The second thing you said, yes, there, have everyone on board.
All
for the longest time,
things.
The baseball guys, they couldn't even agree on, they couldn't agree on money. They couldn't agree on protocol. There were so many basic things. We don't even, like you said, there wasn't this overarching, we need to play, we want to play sentiment. It's like, well, if these guys stop screwing us, maybe we'll play. That was baseball's attitude.
Yeah. And, you know, it just adds more to the idea that I think baseball, you know, give it another 10 years, that sport's dead. It's friggin' dead to a new generation.
I know, you baseball hater.
I hate baseball because of the fact that they're so indignant about change. It's so stupid. And, you know, I hear some of the guys on
this station. They're changing a lot.
Oh, they don't change anything.
New extra inning rules will.
Dude, they just paint. They put paint over S-colored walls. That's all they do. And that's what they've been doing up until this point, too. And, you know,
I generally tend to agree with that sentiment. Baseball does a lot of patching and not a lot of real fixing.
The very fact.
No remodeling going on there. Just slap a new coat on.
And I think that this is going to be a starting point for baseball becoming a hockey in the next 10 years. Because niche, that's what hockey
becoming
is.
Becoming a niche sport?
Yeah, hockey is for the most part in the United States. That's what it's been.
Hey, hockey starts today, by the
it
way.
It does. Yeah, that's fine. But what I'm trying to say is that you've had three things happen here in the last couple months and really in this year that have just started this cycle. One, MLB didn't ban the Astros. They didn't do it right. They literally should have just said, Astros, you're done for the season. That's it. Anybody on that team, sorry to tell you, that's how this is. You're done for the season. You're out.
I don't hate that.
So they enabled them. The coronavirus happened. Really not much of their fault. But the resulting thing was that you had a bunch of players who revealed exactly who they are, which is they don't love this game. They love money. That's it. And for young people, for people in Generation Z, they want to look up to and they want to emulate people that love what they do and have passion. Baseball players don't have passion. They're all petty.
There's a lot of petty. I think there is also a lot of passion.
Proved that. And the huge pitching thing that happened with the Dodgers and Astros, that's literally just petty lemonade.
But that's poured. I think that's painting with a dangerously broad brush, because you think everybody doesn't have the passion or just enough of them to
I
make it.
I think it's very broad of a lot of them that just don't have passion for the sport whatsoever.
Interesting.
Because I think they know that there's a massive payday in it, and they know that this is one of the only American sports where there's insane guaranteed money. How's Bryce Harper been doing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, pretty terrible since he got all that money from Philly.
Yeah. It's true.
Why is it that every single one of these players, once they get paid insane amounts of money, starts sucking? It's because they get complacent.
Exactly. Rest on your laurels. I feel like that's natural everywhere, though. But you're right. You do see.
But dude, think about it this way. They get some of the most guaranteed money, mm-hmm. and they put their bodies in mm-hmm. the least amount of risk of any major sport.
And you know what I wonder? I wonder how much of that is due to the nature of the sport being 162 games, where it just feels like a slog and a grind.
Yeah.
I mean, is it like, I wonder, would there be more passion if they just permanently went to a 60 game schedule where every game meant three times as much? You know, I mean would that change things? I don't know. But you saying that makes me think, okay, well then how do you fix it? How do you change the passion element of it so that it does look like guys care?
Honestly, you need some trans and dental star. You need some just.
So it ain't Mike Trout.
Yeah, it's not Mike Trout.
Whose passion is the Weather Channel.
You need what the NBA equivalent in the 80s was to Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, because that's when the NBA actually started taking off. The NBA went.
And unfortunately, baseball's not that conducive to the head-to-head matchup anyways.
Dude,
even in football, you can be like, Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady, the Colts, Peyton. I mean, they didn't physically play against each other, you know, Peyton tackling Tom, but you could build up that matchup.
Yeah, and you need somebody that's going to take baseball into that player-driven league, because baseball at this point is not a player-driven league. I don't even know what kind of league it honestly is.
Well, the other thing, too, is I think consistently some of the most electric players are the pitchers, and they only throw everyone in 5 days.
Yes.
So,
I mean, that's what the NBA benefited from so much in the 1980s, was the fact that you had Magic Johnson and Larry Bird going at it. It took it to atmospheric levels in the 90s with Michael Jordan becoming a global game. And it seems like the NBA has been able to, decade after decade, pass the torch. The NFL has done most of the same as well. They don't really do it through players, but they do it through teams. Teams kind of pass on torches. Somehow the Patriots have just been relevant for 20 years. But you had that happen from the 90s, where you were kind of passing from the 49ers to the Cowboys to the Patriots to the 2000s are kind of confusing to, I don't know, in the 2010s, really a lot of people won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, I just feel like with baseball, it doesn't have an identity anymore. And this is what's been replaced.
I think you may be right. I think that they may struggle to gain more notoriety and identity if they can't finish this season, which it looks like that may be the case.
Oh, yeah.
Another season that is very much up in the air, college football. They say they're going to be moving forward. We're not sure how that's going to go, how that's going to look, but the Pac-12 seemingly optimistic with their schedule release. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to The Sinner and Saint on 1080 The Fan. Is that an accordion I hear?
I don't know. Luke handles the music. I just threw in some random stuff.
Interesting. I don't think I know the Mad Caddies.
I don't either. Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah, his taste in music is like ska.
I did know that he has a an affinity for that.
He loves ska.
He does.
Which is like, I feel like ska was a bunch of dudes in the 90s who were like, hey.
Who wore quirky crap.
Who wore quirky crap. And they were like, oh, crap. What's that band name?
Real Big Fish.
Why am I blanking on this?
Real Big Fish.
Now, hold on. I'll get it.
Meanwhile, enjoy the Mad Caddies.
Oh, I feel like it was a bunch of dudes in the 90s who were all like, hey, do you like The Clash? Yeah, I like The Clash. Oh, what about you? You like? Oh, I love The Clash. Hey, do you like The Police? Oh, I love The Police. What if we just put that together?
That is an interesting interpretation of what ska is.
What if we just put The Clash and The Police together so we had the best of both things?
Yeah, I don't know that I would think to put those two things together. Those two sounds together.
Well, they did.
But maybe that's what we
had. And that was ska.
Danny Cannell, an interesting take on Twitter. I do want to get to that coming up here. But when I walked in today and we were just talking about what we were going to discuss in the show, you said Pac-12 and I said, what about it? And about the fact that the schedules are out, we want to talk about it, about how they're proceeding. And you said, what did you say? You said,
I think I just waved my hand and went, nah.
I think you said that this seems like, I'm trying to find the exact words, but you.
Oh, presumptuous.
There it is.
Yeah.
Releasing the schedule seems presumptuous. So yesterday, the Pac-12 did come out with everyone's schedule for the upcoming football season starting on September the 26th. You don't think it's going to happen?
No. Not at all. I'm sorry, but I feel like there's this one thing that people keep forgetting. And I don't think the Pac-12 forgets it. I think that they're putting blinders on. But I feel like the fans keep forgetting these are students. That's who they are, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're students first, athletes second. Now, this is where it gets confusing. If students aren't allowed on campus, how are the student athletes allowed to play?
That doesn't, from a logic standpoint, really hold up a ton. If you're saying it's not safe for students to be there, but yet you want certain students to show up and generate revenue.
Yes.
That is a little bit dicey, admittedly so. Now, there is an element where I think students under the athletic department umbrella could get great care, could be well taken care of. But the bottom line is you're still putting 18 to 22-year-olds out on a field, hitting each other, coming into close contact, and then you're putting them back out in the community, and then you're having them come back again. And I worry about just the ability. Like, again, I think baseball was a good jumping off point for this because we've seen how four or two tests in St. Louis sets off cancellation of games. Two tests. Yeah. We're talking about rosters now in baseball of 30. These college ones, they're like 80 scholarshiped guys. Then you include walk-ons. So,
oh, dude. And I include equipment staff, training staff,
coaches, trainers, nutritionists, all of that. And I think one of the big problems or concerns with it is one, just the sheer numbers. But now I'm also thinking, okay, there's an element of this that maybe we're expecting. Yes, certain guys are going to get it. They'll go into quarantine. We'll keep moving. Baseball is showing us that's not the way they're going to be able to go about it, where you just remove those infected with the virus and you put in people who don't. I thought that maybe that might be the way that football and all sports who are proceeding would go about it. But the way baseball is saying, well, no, we're going to shut down until we know more for certain teams. If that happens across the board in football, I don't know how you get through a Pac-12 season. And I think there may be teams that could manage it, but expecting all 12 teams to manage it simultaneously seems like it's going to be a tough task. I want it to happen. I'm not sure at this point how it happens.
I don't either. And the only way I do see it happening is something that I consider to be literally the moment for college athletes. This is it. This is your moment to capture. This is your moment to act upon right here. If you ever want to make a salary and be compensated for what you do, this is the most leverage you will ever have, ever. If I'm a college football player, I am working tirelessly at this point to unionize. So that's what I'm doing. And I get it. I know the Carpenter story from Arizona State. They said they didn't have enough time. That's ridiculous. At this point, you just have to assume as a student athlete, as a college football player, you're not going to play, dude. You're just not. And the only way that you're going to be able to play, if you really want to, is to get a bunch of dudes from your conference together and go, we need to demand salary and healthcare. Like now. We have to have it for 4 guaranteed years. And after the pandemic's over, you have to continue it as well. Because if you really want us to go out there and risk our lives, literally, to play a game that we don't necessarily need to play just so that you can make money that you won't give us, that's unethical.
So you played college sports. I don't agree. I don't disagree with you there. I think that especially right now, considering the risk that they're incurring, it is less defensible to have them play without compensation than ever before under these current circumstances. Now, I don't disagree with you there, but we know college kids aren't necessarily very well organized, at least in groups, that they're not fully matured adults yet. You used to play college football. So I want to know, like, legitimately, and not into the nitty gritty details, but how would you go about this? Like, what you're talking about on your team, like, how does something like this happen? And would you actually expect your conference to pony up and listen?
Here's the interesting part about this, because I've actually thought about it, is that it would really depend on what point at which I was in my college career football. If you would have asked me in my redshirt freshman year, I would have told you that I'm going to play no matter what, and I'm going to do this. If you would have asked me a year later, I would say, I want to unionize. I want to get compensated for this because I think that it's important, and I think it's important for generations of players beyond me. If you would have asked me my senior year, I'd go, oh, I quit. I literally would have just gone, you're going to pay for my last year of school, right? Right? Yes? Okay. Yeah, I quit. I'm done.
That easy.
That easy. Because at that point, to me, my body was so banged up and I was so aware of the fact that I was not going to play in the NFL and I did not want to play in the NFL and we sucked so bad that I had become such a jaded realist that I was just kind of like, man, if I could just get this last year for free, like, this would be sick. If I could just be a student, like, for a term and just chill, that would be very nice. I know that's a very petty way of looking at it, but to be quite honest,
that's a very realistic
thing.
Because it was your
done.
Personal experience. Yeah, it was how you looked at it.
Yeah, I would have just said, if you're going to pay for my school and there is a danger of me playing, and honestly, I would not care what my teammates would say about it. Because at the end of the day, what I would just tell them is, dude, no, I'm not going to go risk my life for this. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just not. Well, I think a lot of people want to do what's best for them. They also want what is best for them to be safe. And that's, I think, sometimes where we have a tough time of, like, there's almost like sides of this virus thing, is that, like, there's sometimes a side that says, like if everyone wants to play and they want to be safe, why don't we just go out and do it? Because wanting to sometimes doesn't always add up with actually being able to. And I think that there is enough desire from a lot of parties. Realistically, I'm not sure how safe it can be. I'm also interested now at this point in time with, so what are we? I guess we are
about a month.
Six. I was going to say maybe
we're
like
about
five,
a month.
Five
because
weeks
I think
away.
Most games was, well, I, okay. So September
well, so Pac-12,
26,
like yeah, seven yeah. weeks away, maybe.
And I was just thinking an original schedule, because when I think about it, I'm like, okay, most of the games start like first week of September, and those are like the kickoff games.
But so knowing the score now as a college student, what would you be inclined to do? I know you said I'm just not going to risk it, but you're talking about unionizing, you're talking about demanding revenue. Like, how would you go about being a part of that? And do you think that there is enough time to work out something like that if that's a direction that they actually choose to go?
I absolutely think there is, because there's no way in hell I think that September 26th date is actually real. I think they're floating it, but I think you're just going to run into too many problems. You just are. I don't think it's going to happen on September 26th. Believe you me, I want to see football. I want to. I
Amen.
Love football. I love college football. I love the NFL. I'm incredibly hopeful the NFL will do it, because the NFL is kind of a nasty league and they'll do whatever they can to get any money whatsoever. So I'm pretty confident they're going to get dudes out on the field. But with this, I think somebody does make a good counterpoint. 503-250-1080 on the fan text line. Maybe the schools should make the athletes pay for the school out of pocket if no games are played themselves. And you know what? I think that's a legitimate argument, to be quite honest. But here's the difference. Again, as we said at the beginning of this segment, it's the player's leverage. It's totally. So if you have enough players who unionize and go, oh, you want us to pay for it? We all quit. What do you want to do now? You want to, you want to go get some walk-ons to play in our place?
You cannot find enough replacements.
No, you cannot.
To make it watchable.
Yes. And the replacements you do find are dudes who are C-level on their high school team.
Right.
And if you think people are going to tune into CBS, 10 million people are going to tune into a CBS game with Alabama versus Texas A&M watching high school average players, you got another thing coming, man.
Well, we have an interesting situation on our hands here. We also have an interesting take about players choosing to opt out. We'll get to that next, but first, Will, with the SportsCenter update. From ska to a little funk / house? I don't know what we're getting into now.
This is me.
Oh, this is your jam.
I think I got one selection. He was like, all right, you can do a song this week. And I was like, okay, this one.
This is your one song.
Yeah.
Cool. I like it. If this fits your vibe, though. You are listening to The Sinner and the Saint. I'm Ryan Buckley, filling in for Luke Anderson. On the other side of the glass, Will Darkins, running the board, producing, doing all things. We were talking a little bit about college football, the Pac-12 schedule coming out. Will thinking that now is the time for the athletes to unify and demand a little compensation before this thing gets going. One text coming in on the text line. Will, with Title IX, how can you pay the football players?
It's a very good point. Because you will have to pay everybody.
Yeah, that is a big time obstacle for what you were suggesting. Not that what you're suggesting doesn't make sense.
And I think that, you know, it's going to happen at some point. I truly do believe that.
I think so too.
It's either that or what you're going to start to see is players that are incredibly good that already have enough potential will just completely forego college and they'll go play in one of these like 2-year league things. Or they'll go to like the AIG Academy or, you know, it'll turn into a like us and them type of situation where, you know, a lot of the talent will dry up in college ranks and that you'll start to see kind of a lower talent levels go to college to play because those guys aren't as serious about going to the NFL. See, you know, when I got recruited and I went to Oregon State, I got to tell you, man, I literally at no point thought I'm going to go to the NFL.
I think you told me it was like three practices in or something like that, or three plays into practice. I don't know.
Literally first day of fall camp, freshman year. I maybe had an inclination about it. I was like, man, that would be cool if I could play. It wasn't even the thought of like, oh, I'm going to do it. I'm getting to the league. Blah, blah, blah. It was like, ah, maybe I could. I first day of fall camp. I just go,
nope, never.
Yeah. Everybody is like triple my talent. The best I could do is start. I thought that, and I go, that's going to be my goal. I just want to start. If I can start, that's cool, dude. I'm good with it. And so to me, I don't feel like I was unfairly compensated.
So you think you got what you deserve for what you did?
Exactly what I thought I wanted to get with the amount of work that I put in. And so I think that at a certain point, again, you'll start to see kind of the separation of guys who are serious about going to the NFL who go, look, dude, you got to pay me in the interim. You got to give me like, what, $500K to do this for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And they'll go to these kind of ancillary leagues. And then you'll have guys like me who probably a little bit more talented, but guys who really don't want to go to the NFL, but love the idea of getting compensated for college.
Sure.
I love the idea of continuing their football career for another 4 years.
Yeah. Makes
sense.
And you
know, hey, if you want to go to the league at that point, you still can. But there's another option. There's this option where you are really effing good and you already probably with just 1 year could go to the league if you really want to. Why don't you make $500K in the process?
So we've seen, and I'll be interested to see what opt-outs in college football look like coming up over the next month or so. I think we kind of saw the first big one just yesterday or Thursday when a projected first-round defensive back out of Virginia Tech just said, I'm not going to play this year. I'm going to focus on the draft. I think that could be the case with a bunch of star players, but just across the board in all the sports, we've seen some opt-outs. We've seen baseball, basketball, football. And I read a tweet earlier this morning that you said, oh, we have to read that. So here it is. This is Danny Canale. He said, not a criticism, but I wonder if the pro athletes opting out realize they are taking on way more risk, leaving stringent testing, strict protocols, extreme protections, than they are not being in that environment, unless they just go home and never leave their house.
Oh, no. What will they ever do in their million-dollar mansion?
There's an element where I agree that pro athletes are probably getting the most stringent and safest testing out there, but I don't know that I believe that it is safer for them to be playing contact sports than it is for them to not be playing contact sports.
Here's what I'll say, and I think the perfect example of all of this was Von Miller. Von Miller tested positive, right?
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows?
Pre-existing conditions. He had asthma.
That's right. Yeah. And he, I remember he had an interview on ESPN right after this happened. And he basically said, look, man, I'm telling you, this thing's really serious. And he goes, which is good. But then he goes, I literally did everything right. I stayed in my house. If I went out to get groceries, I just stayed in my car. I didn't do anything wrong and I still got it. And in my head, I kind of went, no, shut up. Yes, you did. You did something. And I'm not saying that you were flippant about it and
sure,
that you meaningfully did it.
Just, you're not saying Von Miller was clubbing, but just that he probably could have been more careful somewhere.
Somebody went out and did something and probably came back to your house and gave it to you, dude. Like that's probably what happened. But now that we know how this thing transfers, and now that we know that these athletes, or that we've always known that these athletes have such incredible resources, you got to be kidding me that they wouldn't be safer in their massive mansions, isolating themselves, having people deliver food to their homes and staying with their families, which, by the way, they don't have to go to work because of the whole, you know, money thing.
Right. Their families don't have to leave the house either.
No. And you have kids. Oh, well, you can probably get them homeschooled because the whole money thing. So to me, I think that argument is kind of ridiculous because you're putting yourself in harm's way. Now, if you're a dude who's only 2 years into the league, like,
different story.
Yeah, probably would be safer because you're living in, I don't know, an apartment most likely.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't really put roots down yet. And, you know, again, you've only played for a couple of years. So who knows if you're going to be on the roster next year, this year, to be quite honest. But
right.
I just, to me, that's ridiculous. And I know they're saying that with college kids too, right? It's like, oh, they're going to be safer around the team facility. And I call BS on that too, because you're putting them in a college campus and you're letting them run amok together.
Well, so that's the thing too is, and that's really the scary part. You mentioned Von Miller. I think in the baseball world, Freddie Freeman, he said he was doing everything right.
Yeah. And it's not to say like we're crapping on him saying,
no,
you didn't do everything. It's just like, dude, but don't just say that because something happened.
Well, also, but they're getting it kind of just being, at least from what we can tell based on the reports, just through being normal people in everyday life. Because it's not like the Marlins going out to a club or Lou Williams going to pick up his wings or like, or whatever. And the fact that it can be contracted in a way that is where you think you're doing things the right way or you're not engaging in high risk activities, that's the scary part. Because then you have people like players on the Marlins, college kids who are just like, no, I'm in college. Of course I'm going to go out. Of course I'm going to go to that party. Like that's going to be the tougher thing is that even when everyone's behavior is perfect, it's hard to manage. When you get a couple for not being perfect, then it starts to spread like wildfire. And that's when you really start to have problems.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know, man, you know, when this whole thing really became real to me was when I read an article in The Atlantic that the title was, you're probably going to get COVID.
Oui. I hope not.
I know, right? But after I read it and they went over these statistics, and this was very early on, after I read over the statistics and kind of these scenarios that they play out, I was kind of like, yeah, I'll probably get it at some point. And I just kind of resided to that and was just kind of like, okay, you know, I've done everything. I'm a healthy person. You know, I work out incredibly consistently. You know, who knows what's going to happen? I know I'm rolling the dice and I am doing everything, man. I mean, I'm literally at my house all the time or I'm over here and that's it. And so it's just kind of like, you know, at a certain point you kind of have to put your guard down and just say, you know, whatever happens, happens. And this is coming from the mouth of somebody who has no pre-existing conditions and no real health defects.
Sure.
But still, Yeah,
it is. It's tough to be sure. I think there's obviously the fatigue that goes along with it. You talk about like letting your guard down. I mean, a lot of these people who are now trying to compete in these sports have had their guard up for so long, and now they're being asked raise that guard a little higher. It's tough to do. It's really tough to do.
Have you? What's the thing you miss the most?
What is the thing I miss the most? Probably being able to travel and like travel legitimately. Like I haven't seen my dad or my brother, who are down in Northern California since before this started. And, I have been able to do some like socially distant stuff with my mom who lives in Newburgh. But not being, I mean, my wife hasn't seen her parents at all. They live in Southern Utah. They're both older and, would be, you know, pre-existing. So I think not being able to interact with people that you really value those interactions with, who are further away. 'Cause you can still do stuff if you're close enough, but we're not making cross state trips to do that just yet.
Yeah.
You know, but, listen, the NBA seems like they've got it figured out. At least their bubble concept mostly dialed in, as long as you're not going to Magic City for the Lou Will Lemon Pepper Wings. But the Blazers came back last night. We have NBA action on the TV right now. And Will really hates Mario Hezonja. We'll unpack all that and get you set for the rest of the weekend next on 1080 The Fan. Yeah, getting your ya-ya's out with us on a Saturday morning. The Sinner and the Saint. Ryan Buckley filling in for Luke Anderson. I am alongside Will Darkins now. There was some blame or music shade being thrown around earlier between Ska and Will's picks. Whose pick was this?
I think something had to
happen. Or was this a team pick?
I think something was going on that reminded us of Christina Aguilera, so we just picked this one. I would like to point out that you just said we're getting the ya-ya's out with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're doing. That's what we're doing. We're getting our ya-ya's out.
Dude, I love it.
Get your ya-ya's out. She's saying it right now.
That sounds like a teacher thing.
Honestly, you know what? My parents used to tell us that. Like, before this was a lyric.
Get the ya-ya's out.
Like, you guys need to just go outside and get your ya-ya's out. Like, when we were just getting crazy inside or all, like, pent up, it had been, you know, raining too many days in a row or whatever. Like, okay, fine. Just go outside and get your ya-ya's out. My parents used to tell us that.
My mom's from Kentucky, okay. And whenever she thought somebody was doing something ridiculous, she said that they're full of blueberries and horse feathers.
Wow, where did that expression come from? Was there an anecdote? Okay, well, you need to.
I just let that be.
It's an amazing.
He's just full of blueberries and horse feathers. It's like what?
Well, one of those things doesn't exist. A horse feather. I mean, what's a horse feather?
I don't know.
Horses have fur, hair, not feathers.
So says you.
Well, but blueberries are a real thing. So how do you combine this real agent with fake horse outsides?
I think you're thinking about it too rationally.
Maybe. And I mean, you like threw a ridiculous saying at me.
And I would like to also point out, I'm watching the Miami Heat Denver game, by the way, tied at 28, mm-hmm. Start of the second. They just did the on-court interview with head coach Eric Spoelstra.
Uh-huh.
And they had a mic for him. So I think this is kind of an evolution that they're doing
now. The super long mic?
Yes, because when they first started this, they just did a boom above the head, so you couldn't hear them too well. So now they have shifted to the extra long pole mic.
So you know what's funny?
It's off camera.
I have seen and been in press conferences that they've used those in the NBA because like when the Warriors started going on their run, they were overrun in their media room. They didn't have the facilities yet. And so if someone in the middle wanted to ask a question, they didn't want to pass the microphone through like 12 people. So they had PR staffers with these giant batons just reaching across the aisle with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It especially looked funny with Eric Spoelstra because he just looks like a little boy. Like he is a man boy.
He doesn't ever age.
He doesn't.
He has looked the same age since he got in the league.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes I feel like that concept works very well for women, not so much for men. Like I feel like men, if you look the same for a very long time, it's kind of unappealing.
Hmm.
But for women, it's like if you look the same as you did when you're young, like that's considered to be like a good thing.
I think everyone wants to look young, no?
Yeah, but like
I mean,
for
like
some
you're saying
reason,
that you can like. As a man, like, be more distinguished as you age?
Yeah, like, you look like a boy.
You're just saying you shouldn't look like too much boy when you're a man.
I want a little bit more man in there. The one person who I will say has totally defeated this concept for me is my brother.
Okay.
My brother literally looks the same as he did in eighth grade, but in eighth grade, he looked like a man.
Oh, okay. So
it's very weird.
He was the kid who got the facial hair early, hit the growth spurt early, and then he's just been a dude forever.
Yeah, he's just a bro.
Yeah.
And it's really weird. And actually, the people, by comparison with me, it's made people think that I was adopted because I look wildly different than I did as a kid.
You're too damn boyish.
And I swear to you, dude, this happened to me. I brought some friends from college over one time to my mom's house during a break, and we went down to our basement. And my mom has a table where there's a bunch of family photos laid out. And there are these pictures of me as a kid holding
our dog.
Where's
your third brother?
Dude, no, they go, who's that? And I go, that's me. And they go, that's not you. And I go, I swear to you, that's me. And they legitimately are like, no, come on, who is that? Is that like a cousin? I had to bring my mom down to be like, that's me, right? She's like, well, of course that's you.
Like, they're all full of blueberries and horse feathers.
Yeah, that's right. And my wife agrees with it too. She's like, yeah, you look wildly different.
So you're
from like college to even now.
Did your bone structure evolve differently than the rest of us? Like, what happened to you?
I don't know. I don't know what
happened.
And
I even think, like, I've seen photos of you from when you were in college. Like,
yeah.
You look way different now than as Will the football player. Granted, like, I'm guessing your body type is very different.
Sure.
But, like, just in the,
it's
like,
not
you,
even
you
the
look
weight.
Like a different, you kind of do look like a different human.
Yeah, and, you know, I think one thing that did change it was also the glasses. Because I sported the glasses in, like, my mid-20s. And so then that kind of, I guess, maybe changed some things.
Sure.
But you're totally right about that, too, is the idea that, like, I weighed, I don't know, anywhere from 230, 240 pounds when I was playing. I'm, like, 205 now. But even the weight difference doesn't really factor into it. I don't know why I look so different. And it gets me paranoid to think that possibly I got my mind erased.
Oh, going down that road. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is that maybe had your mind erased. Now, if you'd had your mind erased, what do you think your opinion of Mario Hezonja would have been yesterday had you not known about him before?
Because I wish I would have never heard of Mario Hezonja.
Because honestly, we've had this four-month hiatus, but you were full of vitriol for the man coming off the bench yesterday. Blazers only played eight guys. Hezonja played 23 minutes. I thought a lot of what he did was defensible. Let me just go right across the line. 23
yeah.
minutes,
uh-huh.
2 of 5 field goals, 1 for 2 on three,
uh-huh.
3 for 4 from the charity stripe.
Okay.
4 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, 2 turnovers, 4 fouls, 8 points, plus 5 on the plus minus.
Okay. Plus minus. I think plus minus is ridiculous
generally,
in the NBA.
I generally agree that plus minus is worthless.
Yeah.
NBA, it was a fine game. Now, the question or the issue I had was I didn't get why there would be a circumstance where Hezonja is bringing the ball up the court, but overall didn't have such a problem with his play. You, on the other hand, still very much against Mario Hezonja in his play.
I just don't understand the point of having Mario Hezonja out
What is
there.
The point of you?
Yes. Like, you're tall, you're large, but you're not that physical. You have a large reach, but you're honestly not that great at shooting.
So you're perturbed at his general being?
It just, he's not useful. Like, why didn't you play Anfernee Simons? Just play Anfernee Simons.
See, and that, but
at
that's the thing
score.
Is, I don't know. I feel like he shot the ball pretty poorly in the exhibition games. And I think there are a lot of people who are like, Anfernee Simons might go out there and not score and then do a bunch of things wrong that Hezonja at least doesn't do wrong.
I would just feel like all you got to do with Simons is play him like Jamal Crawford in a way, which is like, dude, just when he gets out there, run 2 plays for him. Let him chuck, run 2 plays for him. If he can't produce in those 2 plays, put him into the background, get him out at the end of the quarter, whatever. Put him in with 5 minutes left in the first half. Like, that's all you have to do. Do that. Give him a couple opportunities to score so you can get some momentum going into the second half. I just, to me, Mario Hezonja is such a non-factor and somebody who down the line, even though you read me that line, and that line is completely respectable.
Fine. Yeah.
Yes, it's fine. But it's like, dude, every single one of these games are so important. Why are you putting white bread out in a buffet party?
Interesting. Well, here's the other thing too.
Is terrible sentence, but
I know what you meant. And here's the other thing is I'm surprised that only 8 guys played. I thought the conditioning might be more of an issue. I'm surprised that Damon CJ played 45 and 46 minutes. I know how important these games are, like you said, and especially one against the Grizz, who you're directly competing with for a playoff spot. But, I mean, really, the fact that only 8 players played, that was what surprised me the most, that there wasn't a couple more people like Nasir Little, like Anfernee Simons, just shouldering the load a little bit.
Yeah, dude, they're not throwing Nasir Little out there. I don't want to call him bust quite yet, but
See, I
projects.
Well, the thing is, who else do you have? Like, you don't have any other minutes eaters on that team. Wenyen Gabriel, you throwing him out there?
Can we put a Plumlee out there?
I don't think we have one. I think there's one out there in for Denver right now. Well, listen, Will, thank you for having me in to host this esteemed radio program with you. It has been a blast. I always enjoy our time together in this studio. And for you out there, listeners, thank you for joining us this Saturday morning. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Appreciate the text coming in on the text line, 503-250-1080. We are done here for today. This program will be back next week at this time. You're listening to 1080 The Fan. Have a great day.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.